Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Good morning to you, dear listener. It's Thursday, the 11th of February. Welcome to Africa Link with me, Jane Ayeko Kumet, in Bonn, Germany. In today's program, time to build partnerships. German's President Joachim Gauck visits Nigeria and calls for collaboration to combat terrorism and the refugee crisis.
We have to stand together. It was important for me to see how you are managing things here in Nigeria.
Kenya closes internally displaced people's camps, but some IDPs are not satisfied with the compensation.
Big population of IDPs have not been catered for, have not been resettled, have not gotten justice, not gone back to their farms.
Also in the program, you'll have another chance to hear this week's episode of Crime Fighters.
Top story.
The German President Joachim Gauck has called for strong partnership and collaboration between Africa and Europe. This, he said, would facilitate the fight against terrorism and address the causes of refugee influx from Africa to Europe. Mr. Gauck is on a four-day visit in Nigeria. He further urged the Nigerian government to dismantle trade barriers and increase legal protection and transparency for investors in the country. Some 100 German companies are currently operating in Nigeria. Gauck also visited a camp for internally displaced people. From Abuja, Hubale Musa reports.
1, 2, 3, 4, knock at the door.
A classroom is in session at one of the internally displaced camps some few kilometers from the presidential villa in the Nigerian capital, Abuja. Over 300 pupils are struggling to get over the threat of becoming part of the lost Nigerian generation as a result of Boko Haram terror, which struck northeastern part of the country for over 6 years. Despite the trauma experienced by the children and also their parents who had to flee the war, Mrs. Andraus, also an IDP, said there is still hope of getting them back to catch up with the rest of Nigerian children.
In fact, the children, they are catching up because by the time that they reach this place, because of the sound of the gun and the bomb, so the children, they have forgot everything. And when we start teaching them even to say ABCD, to say their name, my name is so, they cannot able to say it by that time. But we thank God that God is helping us. Now they can read short sentences, they can read 2 and 3 letter words, and then they can solve simple addition, simple division, and simple multiplication.
Beyond their problem of lack of basic education, the over 900 occupants of the camp have to share one single source of drinking water from a solar-powered borehole commissioned by a Good Samaritan. It is this sorry state of affairs that greeted Joachim Gauck, the German president who spent over an hour chatting with the inhabitants and listening to their plights. Gauck, who is on a four-day visit in Nigeria, said he is deeply touched by what he had seen at the new Kuchigora camp and also called for unity in tackling the activities of terrorists all around the world.
The German president, when he comes here on a visit, cannot ward off every misfortune. That's not possible. We have very many refugees back in Germany who have come to us from other parts of the world because of war and terror. We have to stand together. It was important for me to see how you are managing things here in Nigeria.
That report was compiled by Ubale Musa. Now, President Gauck's visit comes as 2 suicide bombers attack the town of Dikwa, killing 60 people in an internally displaced people's camp. Gauck says that Germany recognizes that its capacity to receive migrants is limited. But how were his comments received in Abuja? Isaac Mukabe spoke to DW's Adrian Kirche, who is accompanying the president.
Well, first of all, I have to say that I found it very impressive that many refugees here in the camp that we visited with the German president are aware of the situation in Germany. Some hold posters when the president came and they wrote in German, "Wir schaffen das," we can do it. And this is a very popular sentence that was used by German Chancellor Angela Merkel regarding the refugee situation in Germany. And this is, of course, the hope that the people also have here, although they consider it rather concerning the fight against Boko Haram, of course. People want to go back home to their villages in the northeast of the country. We still have to remember that we have about 2 million IDPs, internally displaced people, that are in Nigeria. And when they say we can do it, they mean defending Boko Haram. And many here ask Gauk for his support in that fight.
Of course, when you're talking about fighting terrorism, it's another issue which unites Germany and Nigeria. Gauk has praised President Buhari's anti-terror policies. But what is Germany doing to help?
Well, I asked Gauk right after his visit to the camp if we can expect anything concrete, especially in terms of military support. And his answer was very reserved. He said foreign interventions in the past rarely led to any success. And then he clearly said that there will be no military intervention from Germany in the fight against Boko Haram. However, he said there will be training. There will be military training where Germany is involved, where Germany can help. And on Thursday, he will meet Buhari, the Nigerian president, and it is very likely that they will discuss about that.
Nigeria is Germany's most important trading partner in West Africa, and Gauk is joined by a business delegation from Germany. How does he want to improve these relations?
Well, economic issues were very important during his visit, especially when he was in the first part of the journey, when he was in Lagos, the economical capital of Nigeria. And Gauk met the governor there and he addressed various economic issues like greater transparency, legal protection, fewer trade restrictions. The governor, in return, asked Gauk for more investments from Germany. And many, including the governor, were hoping that this visit is a signal to German investors to put Nigeria kind of back on the investment map. Remember, the oil price is down. Nigeria is facing an oil price crisis. 80% of the government budget comes from oil revenue. So the economy here is really feeling a strong impact. And we had the chance to talk to Aliko Dangote, Africa's richest man and the famous entrepreneur. And he was quite hopeful and said that this might be a chance for Nigeria and especially for Nigerian politicians to see that this crisis is an opportunity to finally diversify the economy and get rid of this oil dependence.
DW's Adrian Krish in Abuja. He is one of the people accompanying the president there.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
Today, in a week's time, Ugandans will be lining to vote for the country's next president and members of parliament. After 30 years of President Museveni's rule, will there be change? Well, we'll wait to see. But that put aside, there are growing concerns that the situation might turn violent. The international community is now asking the authorities there to ensure that the poll goes peacefully. The Ugandan vote may have a regional impact. In fact, President Museveni has said he will only leave power after East Africa is united. But how visible is this? My colleague Isaac Mugabe put this question to Christopher Kayumba, a political analyst in Rwanda.
I think for President Museveni to say that he will only leave power after delivering the East African Political Federation is not feasible. It is something that he has been saying since the resignation of this organization in 1999, but I don't think the East African Federation can be delivered by any single president in the community. I think it is only he's only looking for an excuse as to why he should be standing for a fifth term of office.
We've had officials from different political organizations, whether it is the ruling party or opposition groups, making statements that could tantamount to inciting the public. Isn't this dangerous for the country itself?
I think there are two elements to it. As you say, if you hear what some in the opposition have said and some in the ruling National Resistance Movement have said, there is a rhetoric that would indicate that we may have some kind of protest. And of course, as you know, it is even more dangerous when political parties have what we would call a militia. The opposition has accused the NRM, particularly the police, of training the militia called the crime presenters. But also, FDC of Dr. Kizza Besigye has also been accused of having the militia called as power team. So there has been a possible violence in case elections are stolen, but that is even made worse by the existence of a militia. And of course, what is related to that, for the police to be involved on the side of crime presenters, and then if you have followed what the head of the police in Uganda, Kale Kayihura, has said, that they cannot allow the opposition to take power even if they are beaten. And if you have also listened to Museveni, what he said when he was in Western Uganda, that he cannot hand over power to wolves, there is an indication that may lead to something that may not be positive.
Now, one of the contenders is the former Prime Minister Amama Mbabazi, and recently he said there could be voters coming from across, you know, Uganda, that is from Tanzania and Rwanda. What do you make of that statement that he made?
I think it is not possible to verify whether this is true, and I also don't think that Rwanda and Tanzania can conspire with a single political party in Uganda to come and vote for any of the other candidates.
Isaac Mugabe speaking to Christopher Kayumba, a political commentator in Kigali, and we do apologize for the poor quality of the sound. Now, in Kenya, authorities have closed all camps for internally displaced people. Over 300,000 people were displaced as a result of post-election violence in 2008. Authorities say €170 million was spent to resettle the people over the past 3 years. DW could not establish how much each person or family received, but as James Shimanyula reports, many are not satisfied with the payment and have decided to remain in the camps.
The closure of the camps comes at a time when President Uhuru Kenyatta is visiting central Kenya, his political stronghold. The Kenyan leader is expected to resettle and issue title deeds to thousands of people that have lived as squatters since colonial days more than 50 years ago. But tens of hundreds of IDPs are complaining that the government's payment for resettlement was not enough, prompting some of them to remain in the camps. Kenya's Vice President William Ruto talked about the importance of resettling IDPs.
As government, we do not expect any Kenyan to be present in any camp because we have brought this exercise to an end. We have had 3 years of vetting to identify the genuine persons that should be settled by government.
Lumumba Odenda, chairman of the Kenya Land Alliance, a human rights group, argues that the process of resettling internally displaced people was not transparent.
Settlement arrangement basically must be an all-inclusive arrangement in the sense that it must deal with the IDPs, it must deal with the squatters, it must deal with other landless populations.
Kefa Magenyi, spokesperson for the National Internally Displaced People Network, a non-government organization, decried the plight of IDPs and claims that many of them are yet to be resettled.
Big population of IDPs have not been catered for, have not been resettled, have not gotten justice, not gone back to their farms.
The government says it has paid the IDPs money to enable them purchase land for settlement. But Justin Mwangi Njuguna, aged 52, laments that the money was paid will settle the debts he incurred while living in the IDP camp.
The money that we can say is payment to IDPs is just money to wipe away our tears, because since living here at the IDP camp, we have to pay people that have supplied us with food on credit.
As the IDPs start a new life outside their bright patches of white clusters of tents in various parts of the country, more than 20,000 others in central Kenya have been living as squatters for more than 50 years.
James Shimanyula with that report. It's now time to sit back and relax while gaining some knowledge on some of Africa's pressing challenges from our Learning by Ear production. Crime Fighters is up next.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello there and welcome to Crime Fighters on the Trail of the Poachers. We're getting very close to solving the mystery of what's been going on in our sleepy little town of Bovo. We have to find out who killed Patrick, a young veterinarian. And we also want to know who's been blackmailing the notorious poacher, Mr. G. His identity was unknown until very recently when a video was leaked to the public. Everyone was astonished when they saw it. The detectives, Alan and Carl, have been looking for Mr. G for a long time and they are now very excited. Is their investigation finally bearing fruit? Let's find out in this seventh episode entitled King of the Poachers.
Hey, Alan, I came as soon as you called. What were you saying about knowing who Mr. G is?
Yes, he's all over the news.
But why did you want to meet me here? This office belongs to... Wait a minute. You don't mean to tell me Mr. G is...
Oh, yes, Carl, that's exactly what I mean.
No way. That's impossible.
I tell you, my friend, wonders will never cease. Come on, let's go in before Mr. G tries to escape.
Hey, sir, can I help you? Where are you going? You can't go in there.
Of course we can. We are police. Get out of the way.
Dr. Susan, I'm sorry. I tried to stop them.
Hey, Officer Carl. What are you doing here? I can't see you now. Come back later.
Quick, Carl, stop that paper shredder. She's destroying evidence.
Yep. What is that?
Done. Dr. Susan Galana. Or should I say Mr. G? You are under arrest. Carl, read her rights.
Dr. Susan Galana, you are under arrest for poaching and the illegal sale of ivory. Anything you say may be taken down in evidence and used against you in a court of law.
Wait a minute. You can't arrest me. Do you know who I am?
Oh, we know, right? You're Mr. G. Now move!
Who would have guessed that Dr. Susan Galana, the illustrious and well-regarded animal conservationist, was also the infamous Mr. G? What does she have to say for herself? Let's join her and Detective Allen in the interrogation room.
Susan Galana. Dr. Susan Galana. Defender of elephants and recently elected chairperson of the Wildlife and Tourism Task Force. Or should I just say, Mr. G, King of the Poachers?
I don't know what you're talking about, young man.
I'm talking about you, Dr. Susan. You're a poacher, aren't you?
Don't you know who I am?
Of course. I believe I just listed all your names and titles.
Who's been putting this stuff in your head? Do you realize I could have you fired in a second?
Your face is all over the TV, ma'am. Everyone can see that Dr. Susan Galana and Mr. G are one and the same. I don't see how you can possibly wriggle out of that one.
Let me tell you something, young man.
Detective Allen.
Well, detective, I know my rights. Don't think you can manipulate me the way you manipulate ordinary prisoners. I want my lawyer.
Do you know Patrick Igunza?
Who the hell is that?
A letter... A blackmail letter addressed to Mr. G was found on his computer. Now, do you know him? Did you have him kill Dr. Susan?
What? That's outrageous.
Answer me. Did you kill a man, Doctor?
I'm not saying another word without my lawyer.
We've arrested the poachers who worked for you, you know. I'm very curious to hear what they have to say.
My lawyer. I want my lawyer.
Next door, Carl is interrogating the poachers he caught red-handed with their haul of ivory.
Please state your names and occupation for the record.
We want to talk to a lawyer.
Emmanuel, right? We know your name is Emmanuel. And you're John.
Yes, I...
Shh! Don't say anything, John.
Where do you sell the ivory?
What ivory? We don't know what you're talking about. Let us go. Why are we being held here? My leg hurts. I've got a bullet wound. I need to go to hospital.
You were found with elephant tusks. That's a crime in itself. You could both go to prison for a very long time. But if you tell me where you sell the ivory and who your associates are, the judge might be willing to reduce your sentence.
You're not listening to me. We don't know what you're talking about. My colleague and I were just out hunting when you arrested us. Huh. And you shot me. I'm going to sue the lot of you.
Who's your boss?
We don't have a boss. We are just hunters.
Mr. G's your boss, right? Your faces are all over the TV, you know. Killing an elephant alongside the infamous Mr. G, alias Dr. Susan Galana. For your information, we've arrested her too. So stop lying and start talking.
We are just innocent hunters.
All right, that's enough. If you don't want to tell the truth, just shut your mouth. Now, John, is there something you want to tell me?
I'm sorry.
All right. Since neither of you wants to talk, we'll just put you in a cell to think about it. And meanwhile, I'll send someone to come and take your fingerprints for processing.
Please, get me to a hospital. I'm in pain. And get me a lawyer.
Meanwhile, Detective Allen has been speaking to the TV station that broadcast the video exposing Mr. G. It turns out the person who leaked the video is someone we already know. Now, Allen is interrogating that person again.
So, Betty, things are starting to get a bit clearer. The sooner you start speaking, the better. So, why don't you just tell me what you know?
Please, I'm innocent. Let me go. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, let me refresh your memory. You and your lover Patrick were blackmailing Mr. G. And you killed Patrick because you wanted to keep all the money yourself. Isn't that so?
What? I've never blackmailed or killed anyone.
Don't lie to me. I've just spoken to your friend Timothy, the TV journalist. He told me it was you who gave him the video they broadcast earlier. It shows the so-called Mr. G killing an elephant. And we can clearly see that Mr. G is in fact Dr. Susan. Being exposed like this is obviously something she would rather have avoided. You also found the blackmail letter on Patrick's computer, as well as your fingerprints. So, I'm going to ask you one more time. Did you kill Patrick so you could keep the blackmail money for yourself? Did your boyfriend Musa help you? He's a wildlife photographer. He was the one who shot the video, wasn't he?
Please. Leave Musa out of it. He didn't even know I had the video. He shot it, but I stole it from his hard drive and sent a copy to Mr. G. Dr. Susan. I sent the blackmail letter, but I did not kill Patrick. He didn't even know about the blackmail. I did it all by myself.
You know that blackmail is a serious offense, punishable by law.
But I didn't get any money.
That's irrelevant, Betty. The act of blackmailing someone is a crime in itself. And you put other people's lives in danger.
Please, officer.
Well, finally, we know who Mr. G really is. And Betty's confessed to being the blackmailer. But if she didn't kill Patrick, who did? Join us next time for the series finale. If you want to listen to this episode again, just check out our website, dw.com/crimefighters. We're also looking forward to your comments on our Facebook page. Until next time, take care.
Crime fighters there. And now, a recap of the top stories that we've covered for you on today's program. Germany's President Joachim Gauck, on his visit to Nigeria, has said Africa and Europe must work together to tackle terrorism and the causes of refugee influx. Kenyan authorities have closed camps for internally displaced people, leaving some IDPs unhappy with the compensation. And we've also been hearing regional concerns about the upcoming elections in Uganda. In case you'd like to comment on the stories that we've covered here on the show, please send us an email to feedback.africa@dw.com or a letter to AfricaLink DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or an SMS to country code 49160-957-59510. And we will air some of your comments. That's all we had for you today. For now, I'm Jen Ayeko-Kumet in Bonn, Germany, saying have a nice day.